Hello, everybody, and welcome to this, the latest episode of the Power Trip here on the US Suplex Retweet Extra Feed. I'm your host, Stephen Wilson, and today we are going to be talking all things NWA Power, rounding up the latest few episodes of the sleeper hits of the wrestling schedule. As always, I'm joined by my co-host, the Quiz Master Supreme of ESSR. It is, of course, at time of recording, the current ESSR champion for the gazillionth time, Scott McLeod.
Thank you, Stephen. Yes, life is good. I am the champion once again. Tegan Knox returned to NXT, and I am almost second dan in Mongolian karate.
Ah, you've advanced since we last recorded. Excellent. You seem to be doing well.
Well, I think we haven't had an episode recently. It's an intense training schedule.
As we know, as Mr. Stevens tells us regularly on the Power television program. So before we get into NWA Power, just a quick bit of housekeeping. So this is the Suplex Retweet Extra Feed, our new brand new bonus content feed. And if you enjoy this and you've not listened to our flagship feed, you can find that. Just search for Eat Sleep Suplex Retweet on all good podcasting sites, and also follow us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram at Suplex Retweet to get the latest updates from us here at the podcast. Right, Scott, so the one thing I think is good to talk about, we've not had a show, I don't think, since we reviewed the pay-per-view.
Yeah, no, thanks so much.
Yeah, so we'll kind of talk about all the stuff we kind of missed over the Christmas period. The first, which is something we've discussed quite a lot since we started reviewing NWA Power, and it was all about the true heavyweight champion himself, Nick Aldis. We've kind of talked for the last few weeks. We don't quite know, is he a heel? Is he not a heel? Is he a face? Is he not a face? And yeah, on the first episode of Power, after the pay-per-view, we finally get confirmation that, yes, Nick Aldis is a bastard. How did you think of this heel turn involving him and his established stable known as Strictly Business?
Yeah, I liked it because I remember I finished watching the main event of Into the Fire, and by that time the next episode of Power was already out, so I went kind of straight into it. So I wasn't able to talk about this turn too much when we reviewed Into the Fire, but I think with the conclusion of Into the Fire and the way that Aldis won, like, the whole question is, did he intentionally use the exposed turnbuckle pad, did he not? And the lead into the next night where he made the official heel turn, I think it made a lot of things with Camille and that, and the weeks building up to Into the Fire, and made everything kind of make sense, kind of looking back. And I think, as recent weeks have shown, Aldis is much better when he's a clear heel, because as a nice guy as I'm sure he is, he seemed like a nice guy when we interviewed him, but when you dress as well as he does and you look like he does, kind of being a heel just kind of comes naturally, I think.
And we've talked regularly on this show about how we felt that the NWA management have poorly booked the team of the Wild Cards and Royce Isaacs and Thomas Latimer. Do you think this is a logical step and putting them with Aldis, given obviously Aldis's connections, of course, with Bram, Thomas Latimer, and their past relationship from TNA and before that, from when they were training here in England?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's good for the Wild Cards because they've been probably featured. They're always coming out with Aldis when the group all comes out and Aldis cuts these promos. Royce Isaacs especially has gone a lot more character time to really flesh out who he is, because I didn't really know who he was before he teamed with Bram or Thomas Latimer. But the whole thing with him coming out with his girlfriend, and then he had that match, I think, with James Storm. And one thing about the Wild Cards is I assumed that with, like, Camille and Aldis's help, they would have found a way for them to regain the tag titles. And I think with what they're doing with Ricky Morton and Aldis, which we'll get into in a bit, I think if Aldis had helped the Wild Cards get the titles back from the Rock and Roll Express, that may have been a more natural kind of switch into what they're doing now.
I mean, I think kind of the kind of logical reasoning, one, obviously the thing with Aldis and Brahma went back years, but also the fact that Thomas Latimer is real life going out with Camille. And we kind of had those teases in the weeks leading up to End of the Fire.
Yeah.
And they officially kind of revealed it on screen. So I think that kind of logically makes sense. But on one of the most recent episodes of NWA Power, not the one at the most recent one they recorded, but the one before that, we got a new member of the Strictly Business stable, a man who loves numbers more than David Hockney. Scott Steiner himself was revealed as, well, the third man, because obviously it was a case of he was a man selected to be the final member of Team Aldis in the latest episode of Into the Firestone Power. Scott, were you glad to see Big Papa Pump appearing on this kind of nostalgia type feel show as Power?
I'm just trying to think, what the hell is going on in 2020? We've got Rock and Roll Express and Scott Steiner, you've got DDP on Dynamite, The Big Show came back on Raw, you've got likes of RVD and Ken Shamrock on Impact. I mean, the Attitude Era is slowly creeping its way back in.
Yeah, I mean, it was there was quite a decent reaction online, I think, to the return of Big Papa Pump Scott Steiner, because I think if you were to logically put him on any current like wrestling program, and NWA is the one he fits in, because it's a throwback.
Yeah, and he came out for a promo with a version of the old NWA tag titles and talked about the transition from NWA to WCW and how he and Rick Steiner are the true greatest tag team and how he's never liked the Rock and Roll Express. And it's one of those things, like, you hoped that they would eventually give him a live microphone, and they did, well, sort of live it as you can get at a tape show. But when you listen to each promo, he pretty much, excluding talking about numbers and the chances of winning this match, he pretty much almost went through Scott Steiner bingo. You had calling people white trash, he talked about fat asses and how much he hates fat people.
Yeah, it's kind of similar to what DDP did a couple of weeks ago on Dynamite, where he just plugged all his merch and all that and all his yoga. It's like, ah, I can do this, I can do that, I can do this, I can do that, yeah. So the Strictly Business stable has kind of established, and we'll kind of talk about more about them in a wee bit, but Scott, one of the main talking points that came out of the Into the Fire review was when we discussed the debut, or the re-debut, sorry, on NWA of the villain, Marty Scurll. Now, we've not really seen Marty a lot on the TV programme, other than a follow-up interview on the first Power after Into the Fire. But in the past week, at time of recording, to the surprise of a lot of people, including myself when I heard about it, Marty Scurll was announced to have not only re-signed with Ring of Honor, he has been revealed to be part of the Ring of Honor booking team. At one point it was revealed he was going to be he was the head booker, but apparently he's just part of the overall creative team. Now, given this latest development, Scott, on Marty's status with Ring of Honor, how do you see that affecting the relationship with NWA? Because there was also developments at the latest shows from Ring of Honor this past weekend.
Well, it was interesting. Like, I was kind of confused as to why Marty went back, because it didn't seem like they were going to make him the guy, because they put the title on PCO, and I like PCO, and it was a good story of him winning the title, but like, you thought if anybody from Villain Enterprise was going to win it, it probably was going to be Marty. You know, you look back at the MSG show, I think that was the time to pull the trigger and put the belt on Marty, but when Matt Taven got the belt, and then afterwards when attendance started to dwindle down a bit, I think people put that on the decision to put the belt on Taven rather than Marty. And so it was interesting to see, like, people thought he was moving on to somewhere else, but I think part of the reason he's like came to the NWA and then made this decision with Ring of Honor is probably to try and reopen the connection, the relationship that NWA and Ring of Honor had originally, because you had the likes of Rick Flip Gordon and Cody when he was still signed to Ring of Honor competing for the NWA title. You had the kind of co-promotion between the two companies for the Crockett Cup. So I think Ring of Honor sees an opportunity with the NWA to still do more kind of co-branded shows. I mean, we've got a match between Ring of Honor and NWA kind of announced for Hard Times already. So I think it's kind of a business thing on Ring of Honor's part, and they're kind of just trying to sweeten the deal with Marty, kind of put him in charge of his own kind of creative to encourage him to stay.
Yeah, to me, when I first heard about it, I thought it kind of screamed a bit of desperateness on the part of Ring of Honor. It's like, how can we stop this guy going away? I was like, let's just give him power to do whatever he wants. It could be a genius move, or it could backfire. We never quite know in terms of when people are given creative control of their own character and the company as a whole.
Yeah, because I heard one report saying it was almost comparable to main roster WWE money that Ring of Honor were going to be paying Marty Scurll to stay. And I mean, you look at the kind of the poor attendance Ring of Honor's had, and even though they're owned by kind of Sinclair Broadcasting, you got to think, are they possibly throwing money at the wall here just to keep Marty? Because even though they don't want to see him as the most valuable guy in terms of putting the belt on him, he's still a guy they don't want going really anywhere else, as it seems.
And you also mentioned that there's been a match now announced for Hard Times. It's got a Ring of Honor versus NWA feel. It's not the one that you maybe expect if you're not up to date, the one between Nick Aldis and Marty Scurll. It's actually came off the back of what happened at the recent Ring of Honor shows this past weekend at time of recording, when Nick Aldis showed up at the end of the Saturday show, I think, I believe, attacked Marty Scurll and the Villain Enterprises, and then we saw the rest of Strictly Business show up the next night, which has now led to a match that was announced now between Nick Aldis and Flip Gordon. What's your thoughts on this match announcement? Because Flip Gordon, as we know, he's a very extremely talented character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think he kind of got his name out there thanks to the Elite and the whole not booking him for All In, and then he aligned himself with Marty Scurll. So I think he's come up, he's developed a lot in the last couple of years. I like the idea of all this. He cut in a promo because the show that Ring of Honor were running when he interfered was in Atlanta. So he kind of felt that Ring of Honor were running what he felt was NWA's backyard. So that's why he came. And he and Flip Gordon of the history, because they had that title match for the NWA title in the lead up to All In. And everybody thought that's how Flip was going to somehow get booed. He was going to make an upset and somehow win the title. And there was a really good story there. So there's kind of some unfinished business there. The fact that they haven't confirmed the title being on the line or not is very interesting, I think.
Mm-hmm. And now that Marty's obviously his contract status is confirmed and he's going to be a part of NWA for the time being, can you see them holding out a bit longer on pulling the trigger on this rematch between him and Nick Aldis?
Yeah, I think from what we've seen with the reveal of like Aldis and Camille's true intentions about whether or not he was a heel or not and some other things in the NWA, following into the fire, I think they're really going for this idea of the long-term story, and I think they're going to hold out, they're going to keep them apart, maybe do like a 8-man kind of thing, Villain Enterprises versus Strictly Business at some point.
Yeah,
and then build on. I think with Marty's going to be kind of moving to a booking role, if he does is the one to take it from all this, it'll be on a big kind of core-branded show, but I think he'll only hold it for a while, and then another core-branded show will drop it back to someone from NWA power, maybe something like an Eli Drake. So he'll hold it for a while, but he'll only do it kind of to gain more attention for Ring of Honor and NWA before dropping it back.
Mm-hmm. Well, he actually came on air, actually. The NWA announced on their Twitter that Marty Scurll will be at the tapings on the 26th of January, which means that after the pay-per-view, we should start getting a lot more in terms of development between Marty and Aldis. But while obviously Marty's not been at the NWA taping, we've not seen him on NWA TV, Nick Aldis is kind of need the placeholder feuds, and what we've had is him feuding with the Rock and Roll Express. Scott, we've talked quite vocally how, as much as we respect what the Rock and Roll Express did back in the day, we think they shouldn't really be a regular part of the NWA Power TV. What do you make of them feuding with the champion, more exact, Ricky Morton is going to be the next man to challenge for the NWA world title?
It's just weird how it came about, because Morton said in a promo like he didn't like how all this was that, then he said he still had a long way to go before he could put himself up there with the likes of the great NWA champions, and said he knew that because he was around when some of those champions were in their prime. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting enough, but the fact that then that suddenly leads to them having going into a big six man with implications of a title match, and especially when he came out encouraging Aldis to give Ricky Starks 5 more minutes after they went to a draw, and then suddenly making it about him and Aldis. So like, you go from Ricky Morton trying to big up Ricky Starks and try to give him another opportunity against Aldis, to suddenly Ricky Starks suddenly fading into the background, and it becoming about Morton and Aldis. And the idea of Ricky Morton trying to be a double champion in 2020 is just something not quite right about that.
Yeah, they seem to have this thing, as we kind of saw in the most recent Power episode, with a lot of the guys in the back, the likes of Ricky Starks, James Storm, they seem to be kind of supporting the push for Ricky Morton to get a shot at Nick Aldis, which is quite surprising. Mm-hmm. You think you maybe start to try to push, as you said, the likes of Ricky Starks more than a guy who's well past his prime.
I think it's a case of they respect those who came before them and them being veterans and that. Mm-hmm. Whereas all this, he's kind of let the success of that they've had while he's been champion kind of go to his head. Like he said in a promo, like, I'm the one that keeps the lights on around here, basically saying that none of this would be possible without him. So I think it's a case of like all this not having respect for the veterans like the Rock and Roll Express.
Mm. But you can only see such a limit to it, I think. I mean, there's got to be a point where they realise that the Rock and Roll Express, the nostalgia feel kind of dies down. I mean, how long do you think they can kind of run with this whole Rock and Roll Express nostalgia trip?
The fact that they're still the champions, the tag team champions, and yet, like, they appeared in a random, like, squash match, the Power after Into the Fire, and then, since then, Morton's kind of almost forgotten about the tag belts and went off after the world title. Like, again, it's further establishing, I think, it's not very good for the tag titles that they still have them. I think, if you wanted to further this feud, as I said, you should have had someone like the Wild Cards or something like that take the belts back, but have all this get involved to then further this feud. Then Morton has a bit more of an established kind of beef with Aldis.
Mm-hmm. As opposed to just the kind of, he said this, he said that, blah, 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 blah. One guy who has a legitimate beef with Mick Aldis, who is still killing it anytime we see him, even though it seems to be quite rare at some points, is Mama Storm's favourite son himself, Tim Storm. Scott, we talked about the Strictly Business formation on the one after the show after Into the Fire, which came at the expense of Tim Storm. And then, obviously, since then, Tim Storm has shown that fire that we've grown to love with him since this Power programme started. What do you make of kind of Tim Storm's role in the kind of background to this whole thing with Aldis again?
I think it made sense that Storm was the one to have this whole turn happen to, because he's kind of become the sentimental favourite for people for mentioning the whole Mama Storm thing, and the fact that some people forget that it was him that started this thing when 10 Pounds of Gold started before Aldis took the title. So I think he's become more over and more sympathetic. He's even came out one week with a Mama Storm t-shirt, which is just brilliant. But he referenced back to stuff that Dusty Rhodes would say, and he was cutting his own version at one point of a version of a Hard Time style promo. So he's still got a lot more to offer. And the fact that, like, also the idea that he and Aldis can't fight for the world title anymore after a while in the first episode makes it even more interesting, because you then wonder, how is he going to get his hands on them? Because we'll talk about the TV title tournament in a minute, but for one of the qualifiers, Storm and Aldis were drawn against each other, and then Aldis immediately tried to back out of it because he said Storm was in the past, so again, he's trying to avoid him. So
yeah, I mean, you mentioned that whole thing with them getting drawn together. We'll mention that briefly. I quite like the fact that Aldis is establishing his heel character back. He is avoiding Tim Storm. These two are kind of like the NWA version of Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. They just keep falling into each other's laps. But like with Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn, you feel like you can still buy with it, even though it's happened like so many times in such a short space of time.
Yeah, definitely. And it's one of the things where Aldis will talk a big game, talk about how, oh, I've already beaten him, he's in the past. You know, deep down, Aldis knows what Tim Storm's heel, he knows the kind of fight that he brings, and he doesn't want to risk having another match with him, so he's like doing what he can to kind of avoid having another match with him, because he knows obviously Storm can't get another title shot.
What's interesting about Tim Storm, actually, I was listening to another podcast quite recently, and they actually referred to Tim Storm as probably their most improved wrestler in the year 2019. Does that just show how much he's taking this chance? Because until the 10 Pounds of Gold series come out, you could probably count on your hand how many people knew who Tim Storm is. Now he's probably one of the most hottest characters in professional wrestling, which just shows what exposure can do to a guy.
Yeah, definitely. And I think we mentioned it before that him losing that match to Aldis to never get a shot again was probably the best thing for him, because story-wise, he had that whole thing of not knowing where he can go. Like, he can go for other titles. Like, he tried forming a tag team, maybe go after the tag titles. He can go after the national or the TV title. But the idea, he said, like, wondering if it's still worth it, what he can still offer if he can't go after the top title that he held for a year before Tim Azul even started. So he held that for quite a while. So it's the idea, if he can't go for the pinnacle again, what has he got left? And he cut that promo when he talked about his mum, and he was almost, like, tearing up, which really added to it. He really felt, like, the genuineness of the promo, and talking about, I've still got something left to prove.
Mm-hmm, definitely. Well, one thing he's definitely got a chance of showing that he's still got something to prove, as we mentioned, the NWA World Television Title Tournament, which is currently going on, and the final is set to take place at the next pay-per-view Hard Times. In fact, the full pay-per-view pretty much is revolving around this whole tournament to decide who's going to win that title. Scott, we talked about it briefly in the Into the Fire review where we mentioned this whole tournament and the kind of how different is the fact that it's got such a short time limit on it at 6 minutes and 5 seconds to decide a match. What have you thought of this whole format of shorter, quick bursts of matches that we've kind of seen on these last few shows?
I think it creates a sense of kind of desperation within the wrestlers that are challenging and trying to get in this opportunity. So you've got this quick-paced match because they know they've only got a short time limit. And if the matches go to your draw, you can have a situation like you had with Aldis and Starks, where you have this drama of like the last few seconds of getting down to get even more desperate. Because in the last minute of that match, Aldis had Starks in a cloverleaf for what felt like a full minute, but Starks just wouldn't give up despite the time constantly ticking down, and didn't seem like there was any way he was going to get out of it. The interesting thing about this, it's all been qualifiers, and the whole, basically the entire tournament's taking place at hard times, but the fact that it's a 6 minute, that each match is 6 minutes, I think that'll help but feel like less cluttered by a tournament, because we've seen pay-per-views where the tournament goes through a whole night, like a King of the Ring, and it just feels a bit, by the end, you're a bit tired of it, like tournament match, non-tournament match, and then semis, and the fact that these are going to be smaller matches, I think you'll still be up for more by the time the final comes. And the interesting thing is they've got two open slots, because 6 people from NWA have qualified, but they're 2 open slots. And I think with that relationship with Ring of Honor and the thing with Marty, I think we're going to see some Ring of Honor stars pop up. I think one of the open slots might go to Brody King from Villain Enterprises.
Right. Ooh, that would be quite interesting. That would be very interesting, actually, indeed. I mean, the spots that have been filled so far, we've got actually one confirmed first round. From what I can see here, we've got a first round match confirmed. It was Tim Storm who beat Royce Isaacs of Strictly Business after he filled in for Nick Aldis. And he's facing Zane Dawson, who beat Dave Dawson. Yes, Dave. That's such a fitting name. It's like, oh, it's Dave! and one first-round match. Scott, in my list here, I've got 5 guys that qualified. I'm trying to think who else I've missed, because the other ones I've got who have qualified is Ricky Starks, Zicky Dice, who beat Caleb Connolly, and the question mark.
I think we've still got one more match to go on next week's Power. Is Trevor Murdoch versus Tom Lattimore, so that'll be the 6th spot, and then we've got the 2 open slots, which should lead to a bit of intrigue. I did like the Dawson's match. I think that's one of the more sleeper hits of the qualifiers so far, because you had the idea of like their brothers, and then, but they still like went at each other, and the crowds started chanting. Half the crowd chanted older brother, the other crowd half started chanting little brother. And I believe it was Zane Dawson who went through, and he had a cast thing on his arm, and he did an old Cowboy Bob Morton move at one point when the referee wasn't looking. He punched his brother with the cast, and that's what got him the win. So it shows these guys that even though they're related, they're like, I still want a win, so I'll even go through you.
Mm-hmm. What do you make of the Zicky Dice character? He seems a bit interesting and flamboyant.
Yeah, I think he's one of those guys you're supposed to really hate. And part of me thought he was going to go quite far in the show, maybe the semis. Then people would get cheered even more when he got eliminated. But then, I see in the bracket, I think he's drawn against one of the open slots. So I think with his character, he's maybe cut a promo beforehand, and then one of the surprise entrants will come out and kind of beat him in quick order, and to kind of, because I think he's one of those guys who can get in the heat and then get his arse kicked, and he'll still remain some credibility. I think then he can come out the next week and complain that, oh, I didn't know who my opponent was, and then he can build down trying to get another TV title shot.
Mm-hmm. The match in the qualifiers I've really enjoyed was actually the first one. It was the one between Ricky Starks and Eddie Kingston. I thought that was actually a really good, solid opening to the tournament.
Yeah, cause I think we talked about it on the Into the Fire review. I think the first two had been announced. Mm-hmm. We talked about how, especially the Ricky Starks one and the one with Eddie Kingston, it was a weird combination because they're two very different wrestlers. You have the younger Ricky Starks, you have the more established brawler, the veteran, and Eddie Kingston. Something I thought was very interesting was, one of my favourites so far, was the question mark in Colt Cabana.
Question mark, ah yeah. Well, you're a big fan of the question mark and all
that. Oh yes. Well, how can you not be?
Well, you're doing the Mongolian karate. Karate!
Or as we refer to them in class, sensei question.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, and talks about question mark, we'll just talk about it briefly. I mean, there seems to be all these subtle interactions at points between him and Thunder Rosa. Could you imagine they two as a couple?
Oh, I think anything's possible, really. That I like, speaking of like the question mark in the Monk Roman cry, like him and Shooter Stevens, as he's now referred to himself, ever since Into the Fire, when Stevens referred to himself now as the third Dan NWA National Champion. He's got the three stripes around his title, and he had that exhibition submission match where he used what's better referred to as the Mongrovian Clutch. And what I loved about that, the way he went on about it, it's the Mongrovian Clutch, as if Joe Gallagher's supposed to know what that is, or if any of us are supposed to know what that is. But something I thought was very interesting, I think Shooter Stevens next week will get involved in Trevor Murdoch's qualifier next week, because he did beat Aaron Stevens the other week and I got an upset win over him. So I think maybe Trevor Murdoch, you know, he's officially got his contract, he might get a shot at Stevens' national title.
Yeah, I mean, there is still the chance that we could see question mark and Stevens kind of start challenging for the tag titles as well.
Yeah, because they've said they want all the gold.
Yeah, well, that kind of opens up the prospect of, obviously, question mark is in the TV title tournament. I mean, looking at the tournament as it's kind of sat, Scott, who would you peg as the potential winner at this particular stage for that tournament?
Well, I think in the moment, like, if I pick someone new, I could, you'll probably be turned upside down when we see who the two open slots go to. Mm-hmm. But I think if I had to pick anyone, even though I love the question mark so much, I would have to say maybe Ricky Starks is a favourite to win the tournament.
What's interesting is the fact that Ricky Starks and Tim Storm are in the same bracket, which I would have pegged one of the two out of that bracket myself personally to win it.
Yes. I think it's the kind of point about the idea of like the kind of bracket buster. You've got two people you want to go very far, and then that kind of thing, having to choose between the two. I think out of the two, I think while Storm's got the story, I think they really see stuff in Ricky Starks, because he had that performance against Aldis a few weeks ago. Aldis made no bones about the fact that he really wanted Starks to be part of NWA Power. So I think if they're not doing the whole thing with Ricky Starks and Stevens over the national belt, maybe you can have him win the TV title, and then you can still have him interact with the question mark.
Mm-hmm. It'd be interesting to kind of see, but as you said, a lot will depend on who is going to be in those open slots. You say one of them is actually going to be Brody King. Have you got any other predictions for who might else fill a slot?
I don't really know. I think he'll either be someone from kind of Ring of Honor, because they tease it can be someone from any promotion, or depending like who they've been out to, it can be someone really, it could really be anybody. Maybe there's somebody new that they've signed that we don't know about yet. The main reason I said Brody King is because Flip Gordon's obviously got, I knew it would be someone from Atlanta Enterprise, and we've already got Flip v. Nicholas. PCO is currently the Ring of Honor World Champion, so I don't think they put him in if he wasn't going to win. And obviously, Marty, I think he'll want to face Aldis at some point, so that kind of only leaves Brody King.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. It'll be quite interesting to kind of see how that kind of goes. Moving away from the men, we'll talk a wee bit about the women. We mentioned one of them in Thunder Rosa in the last few weeks. She seems to be getting a lot of very, very good victories, and she seems to be building quite a fan base online in terms of her body of work. Are you still impressed with what we're seeing from Thunder Rosa, especially because we're seeing her more as the in-ring one out of the combination of her, Melina, and Marty Bell?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's been very interesting the way that this trio, Rosa, Bell, and Melina, have really been booked recently, because they didn't win the tag match at Into the Fire, but then they won the six-woman tag on Power, and because Rosa got the win, she got to choose an opponent for the next couple of weeks.
Well, she didn't choose the opponent. Let's be frank with that one.
Yeah, I was going to say she got the right to choose, but before she could choose, Melina takes the mic and says she chooses ODB, which I think was maybe, Melina was maybe angry that their plan was kind of thrown into disarray with not knowing that ODB was going to come out as a surprise into the fire. But you got to think that Thunder Rosa, if she got her way, she would choose Allison Kay for the title. Mm-hmm. You got to think maybe Melina's kind of out for herself. Like, she wants these two behind her. I think she's the one that wants the title for herself.
Mm-hmm. In terms of Allison Kay, actually, quickly while you're on, I mean, in terms of her as a champion, my personal opinion is she seems to be more known. She's more known as someone recently who's talking about controversies on Twitter. than being a champion who you can believe is a credible champion. I, no disrespect to her, she is a really, she's good in the ring, but I am not buying her as a credible champion. She does not look like someone who could lead the division.
You know, I mean, she hasn't defended the title, I don't think, since Power started, so it's really hard to see someone as a credible champion if they're not in a title match and they don't, like, they don't have any real threats for their title, because you have implications from like Zelina and Thunder Rosa that they want the title, but like they're not having title matches yet. I mean, I think they've teased something for next week, so maybe we'll get something there, but they booked her on pay-per-view when all the other titles were on the line. They booked her into a tag match. I mean, I know that's maybe part of the story, but the fact that she wasn't defending the title is a kind of major step against her. And I think what's interesting is the thing with Marty Bell, and that Lena and Thunder Rosa clearly wanted her in their group. But it seems to be Marty Bell that's been implied as the weak link in the last few weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we noticed that in the first Power after Into the Fire, where Melina came out. Was it the first one or the second one? One of the first two, anyway. And Marty Bell was nowhere to be seen. And then they kind of got Marty Bell backstage and said to him, Marty Bell's just like, you told me to stay away. I mean, I'm just doing what I'm told. And she went, no, you're meant to come. You meant to do that. And it's like,
yeah, even at one point, he even said, why can't you be more like Thunder Rosa? So, some favouritism going on there.
I mean, who would want to be like Thunder Rosa? She probably is one of the top female wrestlers in wrestling at the moment. I mean, actually, an interesting point while I'm on it. I mean, we talked about the kind of thing with Marty at Ring of Honor, kind of with the relationship with NWA. The thing about it is, we seem now to be seeing a lot more since that Marty Scurll announcement got announced, of the kind of relationship between Ring of Honor and New Japan kind of repairing in a way. Mm-hmm. And we've also got the implications of the fact that New Japan and Stardom mm-hmm. are now kind of a partnership. Thunder Rosa, over the January, we've seen her on her Twitter, on her social media, talking about her touring Japan. Do you think this actually relationship could benefit her in terms of actually expanding her width out with, you know, the NWA bubble?
Yeah, because I don't really know how well known she was outside of kind of Mexico before coming into NWA. I know she was in Lucha Underground as a Cobra Moon, but I only knew that after looking her up, because also she was under a mask then, so I didn't know who she was. Mm-hmm. So I think now she's become even more well known since leaving there and becoming part of NWA Power. I think it's a good idea, and hopefully that means we can get some more women from maybe Stardom or somewhere like else like that into the women's division here. Maybe even if it's just for kind of a one-off, because we've seen before, like in the Crockett Cup, we had teams from Japan and from Mexico, so even if people only come in for a one-off, getting to see new faces that we've not seen before, I think it's always a benefit.
Mm-hmm. Could you imagine Session Moth Martina coming into the NWA?
Oh, that would be interesting. It'd be just as well if she wasn't around when Jim Cornette was still on commentary, because I don't know what he would make of her.
Oh, that was great. I love Session Moth. She was doing, you're probably talking about this on your New Japan show, but she was making some very good tweets involving Renee Young.
Oh yeah, I've seen that.
over Wrestle Kingdom weekend. That was quite good on that one. But no, yeah. I think Thunder Rosa should be the person. I mean, I know Melina's the leader of that group, but if they want to take that division forward, I mean, she should eventually, in my opinion, be the one who becomes the women's champion, because she is the standout in the division. I mean, you talk about not knowing her before the program came on. I thought it was Rosemary from TNA when she first showed up.
Yeah, so, she has similar hair in that.
But it just shows how far she's came, you know, and obviously, hopefully, the women's division will start going and advancing as it is. I mean, that's the main points I wanted to talk about on it. I mean, Scott, one other wee thing I want to quickly talk about before we kind of wrap up. The Eli Drake promo on the Christmas episode. We talk about comic timing. I mean, Eli Drake, who's kind of known a wee bit more of a serious guy, I mean, that was some fantastic comedic promos that our own Kwaku Raji would love.
Yeah, I mean, it was Christmas, so I think it was kind of implied that Eli Drake came back to taking a little too much of the bubbly before he came out, and then he had a weird interaction with Josephus Clause, who I don't know what even they're doing with Josephus anymore on a weekly basis. He comes out once every couple of weeks, one time he's a baddie, and then he's suddenly dressing up as Santa. Speaking of Eli Drake, there was one thing I wanted to talk about before we went, and we've seen this interaction where Colt Cabana came out to defend Mr. Anderson from like comments made by Eli Drake, and then we've kind of seen this thing where people seem to think that Ken's a bad guy, but Colt sticking up for him. And then they were in this tag match and they got Cabana and Anderson got disqualified because Anderson got annoyed at the ref and then he put his hands on the ref. I can kind of see they did this similar story back in WCW with Lex Luger and Sting, where Luger was acting very heelish and was making a lot of enemies, but Sting still saw good in him and he was his friend. So Luger would act all goody two-shoes when he's around Sting, but when Sting wasn't around, he would act like an arsehole. And I think we're seeing a similar thing develop with Cabana and Anderson, where Cabana still sees good in Ken, whereas everyone else can see for what he truly is. And eventually Cabana will foresee that he's not the guy he once knew.
Mm-hmm. Talking about that Luger-Sting relationship and how that unfolded as well, you can hear all about that one as it goes on the Monday Night Rewind with Nathan and Chris, where they're going through all the Raws and Nitro of the Monday Night Wars, and they're actually at the point where they're talking about Luger and Sting coming in. So we've got that on the Suplex retweet extra feed. I mean, you mentioned the Josephus Clause thing as well, where he had an interaction with the Auburn Santa, who followed me on Twitter recently. So thank you, sir. If you are listening, thank you, sir.
Yeah, it's very interesting, the kind of people you see in the crowd every episode of her. He's always the one that stands out as Orange Santa, especially since he started wearing that Orange Santa hat.
Mm-hmm. His wife celebrated a birthday at the week of time of recording, so happy birthday to her. You know, it's good to have fans who interact with the show. I mean, the NWA kind of fan base seems to be quite a close knit place.
Yeah, because so they keep announcing like they show the adverts for like Hard Times, how quickly Hard Times sold out, and then whenever they announce a tapings or in the time of one of the pay per views, you see how quickly because there's only limited seats, so how quickly the tickets sell out. You got to think, like, it's a lot of the same people going each time because you go and then they've got this very strong fan base who have probably been following it since the start of 10 Pounds of Gold, so they're just clamouring for more and it's a must-get ticket.
Yeah, definitely. And we hope that they are embracing us here at the Power Trip and hope that if they are listening, they're enjoying what they've heard and they've enjoyed all our other shows and appreciate the analysis we've gave on this latest episode of the Power Trip. We've had a few weeks off from doing it, but hopefully we've wrapped up all the stuff we've seen since Into the Fire. We are going to be back in a couple of weeks' time where we'll be reviewing Hard Times. I think that kind of falls in line with that then, doesn't it?
Yeah, because it's the Friday before the Rumble.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, it's good. What a weekend that's going to be. You've got Hard Times, you've got the Royal Rumble, you've got Worlds Collide. There's so much happening over Royal Rumble
weekend. A week later for us in the UK, we've got Buddy Square Go after them.
Yes, absolutely. And you'll hear all about that on Suplex Retweet, either on the main feed, that's where we'll be doing our Square Go and Royal Rumble reviews, or here on the Suplex Retweet extra feed, where we'll be talking about the NWA, as we've talked about there. Worlds Collide will come up on the four-way fatal, four-way fatal, four-man fatal, whatever, I can't even remember the name, it's something, four fatal, and on the Wednesday Night Wars. You can get all this bonus content on the Suplex Retweet extra feed that's available on all good podcasting sites. It is now free of charge. We used to have it on Patreon, but we thought it was that good, we take it off of the paywall and give everybody access to it free of charge. So this has obviously been the Power Trip. I'd like to thank Scott McLeod for joining me in what has been a thoroughly good analysis of the last few weeks of NWA.
Been good to talk about NWA again.
Mm-hmm. I mean, hopefully, when we next come on, Scott, you'll be a third Dan in Mongrovian Karate.
Oh, hopefully, training's grueling, so you can't rush these things.
I don't know. Has Mr. Stevens been at the training at all?
Not yet.
Knowledge?
He showed up once and just handed out copies of his new movie and refused to sign it and then buggered off.
Not long till you do that watch along, Scott. Don't worry about it. And I have been Stephen Wilson. We hope you've enjoyed this latest episode of The Power Trip, and we will see you soon.